Triple Option coming back to you this week. Tyler is off this week, so it's just me and Pops talking a lot about Purdue this week. He had obviously National Signing Day for football. Boilermaker basketball team played two games, and then of course we're going to talk a little bit big picture of recruiting because we've been kind of following, well, mostly the SEC, but kind of college football in general. And then if we have some time, there's a couple of college basketball, maybe some NBA headlines that we might tackle. But starting with signing day for Purdue, they signed 19 commitments and they finished 75th, mid-70s is their class rank, which part of it is, of course, there's a point system, so that's a factor. But, of course, you know, that's not to make an excuse. They clearly just didn't sign talent. Don't shake your head. Part of it is a point system, so 19 is part of it.
It's just that list is not that good. The size, look, Tennessee signed a lot of people, so that probably bloated their ranking. But, you know, you could USC signed 19 also. Okay, and they ranked 10th to 15th.
They signed five stars. As I said, I didn't say it's an excuse for why they're 75th. However, if you sign 25 3-stars versus 19 3-stars, it adjusts your where you're going to fall in. So I'm just saying that the 75th is not as concrete as the guys they signed.
You're right. I think it's worse than that, yeah, but that's just my opinion.
Now you're just trying to be...
I believe this recruiting is actually worse than what these rankings are saying. But you know,
what do you have to base that off of?
It's, you know, this team can go out and pretty much recruit guys and say you could start immediately, you could play in the Big Ten, you could play this, that, and this, and Western Michigan beats you. I mean, this guy was known, Hazel was known as a recruiter, and clearly, you know, after 1 year, let's face it, he came in last year, middle part of the stream. And he was able to give a kind of a boost, quote unquote, to the rankings, somewhere in the lower 80s to the upper 70s or something.
They finished
mid-70s.
56th.
Okay. Well, this year you did worse.
Yes, they did.
Which is not a good sign. And it just makes me wonder, is it just people's perception of Purdue is just sucking that bad? Is the facilities worse than we think? Or is this guy overbloated as a recruiter?
How about the fact that last year was a really young team? And if you say, well, you can come in and start immediately. No, I don't think any coach is going to say you can start immediately, so you have the opportunity to. But if you're a college player and you can go to Purdue, just finish 1-11, or you can go somewhere else where the team is better and still start immediately, why would you not do that?
I'd like to see more JC recruits because it's clear to me that if you want to say play the young card, which seems to be what Purdue's playing, you need veteran experienced guys who played college football at a level above high school. Even though I don't care what Gerald Currier says, that these guys bring a winning attitude. They come from high school, for crying out loud. I want to see more JC guys because it's been done in the past when the Oregon State coach who went to Miami, what was his name? I can't think of his name. Won a couple national championships. But I can't think of his name. Anyway, one of the reasons he got going on Oregon State was he brought JC guys in to jumpstart the rebuilding of Oregon State. And the next thing you know, it leads to him getting the Miami job after Jimmy Johnson left. I can't think of his name right now. It'll come to me. But, you know, you got one 4-star guy, and that's Robinson's kid. And he looks legit. You hope the big tackle they got in JC comes, but the guy's 380. Smells like a guard to me. You just don't put guys that big outside because you need guys that are athletic to go against the athletic ends that you play. I'm glad to see that they went and hit the offensive line, but it's just kind of scattershot, and I just, coming off a 1-11 year, you just would have liked to have seen rankings higher. And I know this is maybe just talking about the line in an exhibition football game. You know, what do you think? 5.5. But I think Purdue could use any good news. I mean, if you watch the basketball programs, like the men's basketball, I think you just, I'm ready to quit because they just make my head hurt.
Wait, we're not there yet. We will get to Purdue basketball.
But
I know, you're frustrated. I got it. Hey, the softball team today got an upset over the number 10 Texas Longhorns.
Terrific. Where's that put you? What I'm saying is for the two major sports.
It's the first game of the season.
Men's football, men's basketball, it has been a bad year. And you would like to find something to put your proverbial Purdue hat on, and I'm sorry, this is just more. Oh, by the way, we lost to Northern Michigan. Northern Michigan. They played them at basketball. I'm just saying it's one of those
things. Oh,
they're
talking about recruiting.
No, but I'm just saying, you know, it's just, you just like to get the year over and get to spring and just say, just wash your hands of this season, football, basketball, and hope that we can start over next year.
Well, you know, I will agree. The JUCO I agree with you on the JUCO thing, especially at quarterback, because the top three quarterbacks on your depth chart, unless they pull someone out of somewhere that I have no clue, is Etling, Appleby, and Blau, whatever you say, is David, the new freshman. And in order, those three guys, it's true sophomore, redshirt sophomore, true freshman. That's your three on the depth chart. Now, I'm not saying that the coaching staff, as I put in my article, has to believe that neither of those guys is the answer, but could it hurt to go get a JUCO guy? Like on the NFL, always has, even if you go with young quarterbacks, usually follow him up with a backup that's at least played. And part of it is because he's a failsafe, but part of it, too, is just so he can give the young guy the nuances that he's learned in the league. Now, I don't know, Pops. I'm assuming the college quarterback from the JUCO could still give the young guys nuances in college football, even if it's not D1 level. He could still say something along the lines of, okay, well, when you see this, watch out for this, or, you know, this is how I prepare. Maybe you want to try this. I'm assuming that at least some of those things cross parallel lines here, right?
You ready? You done? No, I agree
with
you.
You don't get to ask that question. You're the biggest rambler there is.
No, I'm not. No, I agree. Now, I've told you this for years. If I was a football coach, and I don't play one on TV, I just play one on the armchair. I would have a JC quarterback on my roster every year because what you're saying, the value. Playing above high school, it's not the same thing. The experience in playing different offenses, it's vital. Obviously, they decided to go young, but boy, if that's the case, I would, you know, you and I were talking off mic earlier this week. How do you measure success or progress going from 1-11 to, I don't know, but clearly, you know, all of us, all the roses and petals and sunshines and unicorns we were predicting last year, this is going to be potentially another year without a bowl. And because, you know, basically you're going young, I mean, very young. And it's just, you got three quarterbacks who probably still can't shave or get alcohol. They still have to learn to get the game, or still have to learn to play the game, the college level. And I'm totally with you. Dennis Erickson was the Miami coach. He was at Oregon State, and what he did is, when he went to Oregon State, he went and got a bunch of JUCO guys, because it kind of jump starts your rebuild. Those guys know how to play football. They're bigger, they're physically thicker and everything else.
Right.
That's what I like to see. I mean, if you coming off 11, season 1-11, I would like to see 6-7 JC guys, you know, because they need them. They need veteran guys, not just for leadership, but potentially be, you know, contributors on this football team.
So as down as you are on this recruiting class, quickly looking at it, is there any other, because I agree, they got a JUCO guy, you don't like him at tackle, and I can understand why. I agree with you that Robinson kid, and as I told you off mic, finally looks like they got a linebacker, and I know he's a bit smaller now, but obviously he's a senior in high school. You would think that he's still going to get a bit bigger, but he finally looks like Purdue gets a linebacker that's traditional linebacker size, as opposed to these 6'1", 6'2 guys that are just a bit over 200, whereas Wisconsin running backs have another 40 pounds on them. He looks like he could be a traditional size guy, 6'2", 6'3", 250, and move. Is there anybody else on the class that you look at and you think, okay, this guy looks like a solid addition?
Well, I don't know if I'm going to butcher this guy's pronunciating his name, but Juwan Bentley, linebacker, Hyattsville, Maryland, 6'2", 245. Nice size.
He's supposed to be, Hazel talked about him and Robinson. They could potentially both be day one starters.
Yep, Kirk Barron's an offensive lineman out of Mishawaka, 6'2", 294. You can't teach size. Or the line says in the NBA, you can't teach height.
He's supposed to be a guard, I think.
I think the guy out of Kentucky who was like the top number six guy in Indiana when he left, not seeing him. He was the end out of Kentucky.
Played at Carmel. Yeah, right.
Yeah, I think that guy's someone to watch. He might be able to get in right away.
I don't think the NCAA has ruled yet whether he can play immediately or not since he transferred.
Terrific. That's just more better news. Well, anything you want to continue to rain on my Purdue parade with more better news?
I'm just filling in the information here for you.
That sucks. Other than that, the one of the common things I like to talk is coach him up. Obviously, the coaching now becomes even more relevant with the class that clearly is just doesn't thrill anybody, and you're going to have to make these guys excel above even what they think, because otherwise you're looking at a team that might win 3 or 4 games.
So, quickly, because obviously we don't want to get into Purdue football too much, because we'll talk more and more as we get closer and closer to the traditional offseason for football, because they're just getting ready for their morning workouts. But, I mean, does this make the hot seat even hotter for Hazel? Because he billed it as a rebuild, and I don't think anyone... He brought in excitement, so I don't think anybody gave him... or thought, oh, this is going to take a really long time. But, you know, I guess you can win with young guys. I'm not saying you can't, but you're talking about the JUCO thing, speeding it up. Now, all of a sudden, if you win 3 games this season, 4 games this season, has the heat really turned up on him all of a sudden? Because don't get me wrong, it seems like a consensus nobody liked Hope, but he recruited at least better than this. He was close to a bowl game, and I know you don't want to consider 6-6 success, but he was at least getting there, and he consistently got at least one big win a season, which for the past few seasons in Purdue basketball and football, or at least last year in Purdue football and the past few seasons in basketball, seems like it's impossible, but he could find a way to at least beat an Ohio State, a top 25 team.
No, I think you're aiming at the wrong sport and the wrong head coach. Hazel just come in. You know, the whatever the slogan was last year, what, rebuild?
It's reshape, rebuild, return.
Frankly, I said this with tongue in cheek, but I mean it seriously. Rebuild and we'll get back to you, because they've got a lot of work to do. But you can't just, only a stupid person, or maybe if we were like, you know, Mike Lombardi and the Eagles guy, Brannerman, that, you know, you and I would go tell Hazel, well, sorry, it just hasn't worked out, 1-11, we're going to have to whack you.
So even as down as you are, you're still willing to give him more time.
No, I mean, if you thought, you paid this guy more than you paid any other coach. I mean, it's like all of a sudden you found a piggy bank and broke it open and said, we can go actually hire a football coach. This guy took a Kent State team that sucked when he got there and turned him 11 wins this last year.
Yeah.
You're going to have to give him time. I mean, everybody knew the Purdue football program wasn't that good, but clearly he's decided, instead of like building good on top of crap, he decided to strip it all the way down to the bare and the foundation and start building up. So it's going to take slower. It's going to take longer. Only a moron, which I'm not going to say that Morgan Burke isn't a moron, but only a moron would fire him after 2 years.
Well, I'm not positioned for firing.
Because I think he's probably a couple of years from the heat dust talking about of his seat getting hot.
Well, see, you're surprising me here because I'm not saying that, but with all the, this class sucks, Purdue really stinks, you're really surprising me here by not even saying that the seat is still ice cold then, that people are going to give him time.
Get back to me about, let's get into Big Ten season. Get back to me about Halloween, and I'll tell you if I'll take the temperature of a seat, because at this point I still think it's still kind of early, and you know, all the excitement was basically before they actually kicked the football off. After that, it was just kind of downhill. But
so let me ask you about that, because obviously he came in here, you talk about stripping it to the bare. He came in here and he made it clear that his mission was more than just the product that was on the field. He wanted to rebuild Purdue football culture. Is that fair to say? He wanted to rebuild that culture for what is really an apathetic fan base if you look around college football.
Yeah, I think he wanted to bring back your alumni and get them and get more into it and get people excited about it, which really right now still seems kind of like, boy, it's kind of like buying into the tooth fairy. I mean, you're going to have to really show me some evidence here, pal. But no, I mean, that's kind of what he wanted to do, but it makes me scratch my head and wonder how the hell did Danny Hope win 6 games?
Because me too.
I don't know. I mean, and you know, Hope probably had the best laugh last year, but I don't know what he did, but he did something.
All right, so then before we leave this, now that this is the completion of his first year, he went through a whole season coaching, he finished his first recruiting class, so obviously with the football product you're not happy, but in terms of, you know, he added the 2-11 session because he was doing stuff for fans, he brought back alumni, which I think is new because Breeze was here, Schweigert was here, Allstott was on campus for a week as well. So in terms of what he did for the football culture of Purdue, how do you think he did in year one, if you had to give him a grade?
I guess probably somewhere in the B's, because clearly the enthusiasm there was there. There was more fan support there. The alumni were coming back. It's just the product on the field was bad. So I'd say B-, largely because I think the product on the field has to show something to the fans. Because, I don't think they're going to buy in very long to coming back to watching a team getting smacked or killed all the time.
No.
I mean, seriously, Purdue is not only raising ticket prices, but they're tiering their tickets just like everybody else does. So, you know, instead of getting somewhat screwed when Ohio State comes in, you're really going to get screwed to watch Ohio State have the opportunity to play homecoming even though they're on the road against Purdue.
Well, all you had to know is that game against, was Illinois here? It was like, you get tickets for like 35 cents, something
right,
like that. So, all right, quickly then, looking around the rest of the recruiting landscape, because I wrote about Purdue and you wrote about Well, you kind of wrote about the top 10, but you kind of shaded it toward the SEC, but really wrote about the top 10. So just additional comments that you wanted to put in for the podcast since we're talking about signing day.
Lou Holtz, any comments? Is the SEC still overrated? Well, you know, despite the SEC having not won their eighth national championship game in a row, it certainly looks like the SEC as a whole, at least the top schools, really took this to task, because I remember an interview with Nick Saban this week where he talked about complacency, and I didn't see much of the game versus Auburn. Certainly I saw the game against Oklahoma, which was just meaningless, but the Auburn game just was highly competitive. But boy, he probably has done his best year of recruiting for Bama, and that's saying something. But Les Miles, who has not necessarily had his classes ranked in the top five, maybe the top 10 the last few, he responded also with the second best class. And it's, and Florida State, Jumbo Fisher, he's been there 5 years, every one of his classes top three. So I would expect those three to be right up there. Tennessee broke in, but as I think we were saying, a lot of it because they got a lot of four-star guys, no five-stars, and they signed the most players. Ohio State, clearly, Urban Meyer knows how to recruit like an SEC coach. It's basically 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, and kind of working around the rules. I know it's hard to believe NCAA, but they do. But here's the thing that I wrote in my article, and think about this. Who's Ohio State really competing with in this area for recruits? Nobody.
Nobody.
Alabama's got to not only go up against Auburn, but they got LSU.
Well,
they got Florida State.
I'm surprised you didn't mention
Texas
your article.
A&M.
I think all, is it 12 in the SEC? I think
14,
last 14, whatever. Because I think, I don't know what they finished, but I believe when Tyler gave us that look a couple weeks ago, 14 was Mississippi State, and they were still in the top 45.
Yeah, I was saying that Alabama and LSU, they got to not only, they can't. It's not just one thing in the conference; it's in their own state, But then the conference, all these schools are starting to recruit like Saban does.
Yeah.
And Les Miles and Jumbo Fisher. And let's face it, Florida State basically is an SEC school. Location, style, size, everything. They're an SEC school. So, it's extremely impressive. You could poke holes at this again, ranking the recruiting classes. But I think most coaches rather have an overabundance of talent than an underabundance of talent. Mm-hmm. And, I think it at least gives you an idea of what each team or as coach is starting with when the season starts. And certainly the in my book, still the two best schools, I guess you could say Florida State probably is up there too, but it's still Bama and LSU. And you put Florida State. I don't necessarily buy into Auburn, despite Tyler's saying that, well, they could be a top whatever each year. I don't think so. But clearly, I think, Florida State outside the conference, but LSU is the guy that Alabama still is going to be their main competitor.
Quickly, before we leave recruiting, because just said it, since you wrote the article on it, and they are both in the SEC, what do you think about Tyler's claims? He was making a comment that he think that Kentucky and Tennessee could be big-time threats in the East this year just because none of us really like South Carolina. I'm surprised that what's-his-face at Florida still has a job. And, of course, Georgia is a pretty good program, but they just lost the quarterback. Well, four-year starter.
Right, Murray.
Yeah.
Clearly, if the Tennessee coach can take these, recruiting gains he made this year, then, 17 four-star recruits, that's the tops in the country from the list I'm looking at. And their average player is the fourth highest as far as amount of, stars, 3.53. So, it depends. Can the coach coach? Same thing with Kentucky. I mean, they finished 21st on this list. That's impressive for a team that it's tough to get there, but clearly it's still the SEC. They have 19 three-star recruits, which from on my list actually is behind Penn State. But if these coaches can coach, then they could certainly get better. I don't know. It depends. I still think probably South Carolina wins that, but it's just the East is nowhere close to what the West is.
Oh, no, definitely not. All right, leaving signing day to talk a little bit about Purdue basketball, just to update, I guess. I don't know. I wanted to wait because we wanted to see what happened with the Ohio State game. And, I talked to you starting with the Minnesota game. I talked to you early on, and obviously there are a lot of negatives to pick out because the free throw shooting was just awful. That game should not have gone into overtime. But I don't want to say I was hopeful, but you know, some people brought up the point that Purdue's losing streak started after the overtime games with Northwestern. And granted, the Northwestern game is an anomaly in itself just because of the circumstances surrounding that game. But, you know, you play bad because both teams played awful in that game. And you lose, I don't want to say a heartbreaker, but you lose a game you really could have won, should have won. And so then you're in a young team that's clearly not mentally strong, goes on a stretch of four, and then you go into this three overtime game, and I talked to you, and I talked about it on Twitter, that I felt like that was a game they had to win because that streak could have really gotten ugly if they didn't pull out a game that they should have won in regulation. But it didn't really matter because then they come back to Ohio State and just look awful. They score like the first 6 points, and then Ohio State goes on a run, and I don't know if Purdue was ever closer than three. They were able to cut down a couple times, but Ohio State, and that's been Purdue's issue all season long, is they give up these 8-10-0 runs, and then they can score two or three, and then the team goes on another 8-10-0 run, and Purdue just can't stop runs. But what are your thoughts? I think you watched part of the Minnesota game. I think you watched the Ohio State game.
I watched parts, unfortunately. I was forced to watch Minnesota-Purdue because the game I wanted to really watch, Blackhawks and Ducks, weren't on. Look, this team fights itself. I mean, it might play for like a handful of possessions where they say, yeah, they might be getting it. Then they come down and take stupid shot, turnover, stupid shot, miss free throws, and you're like, well, this is Purdue. You know, I think it's pathetic that you had to go three overtimes to beat a Minnesota team at home that I don't really think is that good. I mean, and Purdue's just a struggle to watch. They're a struggle to play. They can't get any consistency, and I blame the coaches and or the players, which, you know, either way, it's Matt Painter's fault. I didn't think they were going to beat Ohio State, but, you know, you had the thesis that if they could beat teams they're not supposed to, they get in the Big Ten. Sure, I could win the lottery, too, if I got all the numbers. Doesn't mean it's going to happen. It's just, you know, I think I'm done with this year. You're 14-10. You got some really the tough part of your schedule's coming up. The heat needs to be turned up on Painter. So if I'm taking the temperature of seats over at Purdue on the athletic coaches, Painter's seats ought to be warm because Painter was brought in under the same Morgan Burke, cheap, let's get former Purdue assistant coaches back in her plan to take over for older coaches. And while it appeared that he hit on something early because of one recruiting class, it's not been the same since Robbie Hummel left. And I continue to maintain, had Hummel not torn his ACL the second time, Purdue would be working on their third consecutive season with no NCAA tournament.
There's
Nobody
a
wants to talk about that.
No, because there's a qualifier that say if Robbie Hummel didn't tear his ACL the second time, well, what do they do the season he doesn't tear his ACL?
I don't know what they do. I'm just saying that would be great, but I mean, you know, I think Purdue gets the Final Four that year, but I'm just saying that's the only reason that, you know, more people are not putting pressure on this guy as far as I'm concerned.
Looking at this season, because you said the heat should already be there, it should already feel warm. Does it ramp up even more, considering the fact that if Purdue beat Ohio State, they would have been fourth in the conference just because Michigan State, who lost this past weekend to Wisconsin, I think, is now tied with Michigan with two conference losses. And then I think third place has four, five, six losses. And there's a bunch of people sitting there with four, five, six, seven conference losses. So Purdue beating Ohio State would have put them like fourth in the conference. So does that ratchet the heat up even more if they continue to fumble around like this when you could finish third or fourth and get a bye in the Big Ten
yes,
tournament?
Yes, it's there. I mean, clearly this talk about how great the Big Ten tournament or the Big Ten is this year, wrong. Outside of Michigan State, it's just pathetic. Or not pathetic, I guess it's just subpar. Not only is a bye there, but getting in the damn NCAA tournament's there. I mean, this is not that good of a conference outside of Michigan State. Not at all. And Purdue still can't seem to go on the road to beat anybody named not in Illinois. I mean, which is, you know, I don't think that that's really anything to crawl about because I think Illinois is on their longest losing streak in years. So that makes the Purdue win over Illinois look even less impressive. And maybe instead of holding it in champagne, they could just maybe go up into an outdoor court or something and say, well, it just doesn't look that good. But it's there for Purdue to get by, to finish above 500 to get in the tournament. They still, in spite of that, are going to probably finish out of all those and probably not make the NCAA tournament, which in my book is not good.
Well, out of curiosity, just for comparisons, do you consider an admittance into the NCAA about the same as a 6-6 season for a football team, that it's really not that difficult? Because you're talking about, what, 20 wins in a season?
No, I think it's more prestigious to get into the NCAAs because, you know, you're at least getting in there. And, you know, if you get the right draw, maybe you can win a couple games. Whereas a 6-6, you know, you're in a bowl, but you have no chance. No, it's not, okay, you get in the toilet bowl. Does that mean all of a sudden Purdue rises up, they beat the hell out of somebody 100-0, and all of a sudden they're going to move up in the rankings to the top five, and boy, we won Alabama if we would have beat them. It's not nowhere near the same, because if you can get in there, and you see some of these young teams, Virginia Tech do it, George Mason did it, they got in there and they made a run either to the Final Four or almost. They were that close to actually winning a national championship when Purdue has been nowhere near it. So no, I don't consider it, you know, passe and just say, well, all we do is go to the NCAA tournament. Well, I just wish we had that problem.
Well, okay, then how do you, because you talk about them in the same light, so differentiate a little bit more here, because you talk about, you should be, in football, you've talked about how 6-6 should be the floor, and it seems like you talk about the same thing with Purdue, that NCAA admittance should be the floor, but now you differentiate that one's more difficult, so really, give me some more.
I think it's because you play more games. It's football, yeah. I mean, you would think out of 12, you could figure out a win to get more than six. So that, you know, and with so many tie-ins getting in there, you're guaranteed it. The Big Ten's not guaranteed buys to get into the Big Ten. Okay? I mean, granted, you can. If that's the case, if Purdue got close, you know, with a 14-14 team would get in the NCAA tournament. Is that going to happen?
No.
Okay, is the 17-11 Purdue team, is that going to get in the tournament?
No.
So you have to earn your way in, as opposed to bowls, you can almost back your way in. You know, you can get in spite of yourself. The NCAA, I know it might sound contradictory, but they're just two different things.
Okay, but now it sounds like you're saying that then Painter getting into the NCAA, well, your comments all season long kind of dictated that you've been treating it the same way as 6-6 for football bowl games. Now it makes it sound like you have one, higher expectations for Purdue basketball, and two, that's not the bare minimum that he has to do.
No, I think that, well, no, I think if he could get in the NCAA tournament on a fairly consistent basis, I think people would be fairly satisfied with it.
Okay.
But this guy had a class his first year, and he was kind of, and you thought, okay, this is just the beginning of a brand new tradition at Purdue basketball, because as good a coach Gene Katie was, you couldn't recruit. And if Painter could go out and get these three guys, and Purdue was back on the national scene, and we were talking, Hummel's junior year, I remember vividly sitting down watching, 24-3, ranked third, he goes in the middle, puts his right foot down, wham, that was it. I mean, that team probably was the Final Four team.
Well, they were clearly the best team at that time
right,
in the country.
But, you know, it looked like, and this is the class that everybody said, oh, this is the next baby boiler class. Well, I'm sorry, I don't see it. I mean, and your production on the court suggests that class, somehow Painter hit on one class, and, you know, from where you were, okay, with Hummel, and so close, and then you had Painter, I don't know if Missouri approached him or he approached Missouri to get his extension, to get more money, for his assistants, to get Mackey Arena upgraded, and since then, you can't make the tournament. That doesn't help his case either.
No.
Because I don't care what happened, whether he approached Missouri, Missouri approached him, he used Missouri as leverage to get more money out of Purdue, all right?
Yes.
Well,
that
it
is
does,
a fact.
Yes, it is. So that suggests, well, okay, you're tying this guy up, you believe in him, he's got everything solved, you just come off of Hummel's fifth year, all right? You made the tournament. You scared the hell out of Kansas, if you remember that game.
Yes,
they really should have beat
it. Really disappointing loss.
They should have beat Kansas.
They should have.
That left you thinking, okay, good things are ahead. Well, had not been close since.
Okay, so then a couple last questions. You said that really there should be no heat for Hazel at all. So if the heat scale is 0 to 100, I don't know why, but 0 to 100, what is it for Hazel, just for reference, and what is it for Painter right now?
Only make it 0 to 10.
Fine, 0 to 10. Jeez, it's
too many numbers. I would say in my personal temperature seat scale for Hazel, I suppose probably it's enough for the fact that he probably doesn't find this acceptable. I mean, I can't imagine a guy going out saying, "Well, 1-11, it's a good year. Let's just keep going like this." I suppose, too, simply because he probably doesn't find it acceptable.
No.
For Painter, 7.
7.
6, 7.
What is the mark for firing? Like, what number is it that it's, why is this guy still here? Is 8 that number? Is 9 that number?
I think if he comes off another season next year where he does not get to the tournament, even though this class is the next highest recruited. This is a class, right, that everybody's waiting for?
I think it's the next one.
I think it's this one.
I don't think it is.
Well, we're going to have to check into that. But let's say if he goes another, let's say this team kind of fumbles around and in spite of itself, you know, other than wearing them damn tuxedo shirts, which they may want to make a big deal of. Boy, they look good.
It was for charity.
If they don't make the NCAA tournament again next year, I think that you're going to have to take a long look at what's going on. So I'd say probably 9.
All right, so put on your Morgan Burke hat here. Is there any scenario?
Let me hit my head against the wall to get stupid.
Is there any scenario that Painter, you will demand Painter be fired after this season? Because you just said now, you're already accepting they're not making the tournament this year, which is obviously not an outlandish claim, but you already at the same time you said, well, he'll be back next year. So is there any scenario where you're saying he should not be back in West Lafayette next season?
I think simply because of the financial commitment, which is un-Morgan Burke-like, because he likes to keep his wallet stuffed in his... Probably didn't even carry money around.
Leaves it at home.
Right. So that way he can't spend it. I think you're going to give him one more year because you made a big financial commitment, again, to him, his assistant coaches. Granted, the facilities needed it. I'm not going to argue about that. But you made a commitment of all three of those. So I think you're going to give him one more year. But if he comes off another year, because I don't know, I can't remember the length of his extension, but...
I want to say 6 or 7, but that could be wrong. Actually, knowing college coaches, it might have been like 10.
I don't know. That would be even dumber. Purdue's never been known as the type that wants to go out and throw money around. I mean, they throw money around like the old George Halas saying about him, like manhole covers. All right. But I'd have to think after 3 consecutive years of not making the tournament, after a year in which you had come off, make how many years did they were the end of the tournament? 4 or 5?
He missed it that first year because Tegan Landry got hurt. Then he made it the next year, and then he made it the next 5 with the baby boy.
Right.
So 6.
6 in a row.
Yeah. And now it'll be 2.
You leverage Missouri to get a raise. If you go 3 years in a row, I'd have to seriously realize we're really going down a path, and you're going to have to pull a Danny Hope out, because Hope and Painter are the same, because they were the same thinking, the same guy, the same logic to get guys on the cheap that were former assistants, all right, that are tied to Purdue, and to get him in here to run. Well, it didn't work for Hope, and it's certainly starting to begin to look like, unless Painter could turn this thing around, it certainly looks like this succession plan, thought up by Morgan Burke, which I think he needs to have some heat on him too. I don't care if he went out and actually got Hazel and might have screwed up and got it right. He's the one who initially hired Hope, and he went out and hired Painter, and they kind of, the rebuild on Mackey ended up decreasing seats, which makes absolutely no sense.
Yeah, that doesn't make any
sense
at all.
That's Chicago Bears stupid when they rebuilt Soldier Field. But he deserves some heat, too. Not just Painter, Morgan Burke.
Agreed. Quickly, because I do want to talk about this, because I think we were going to try and talk about it last week and forgot. A couple weeks ago, there was a game between the Cleveland Cavaliers and the Lakers, and those are the two teams we want to talk about. And the storyline actually from this game is that the Lakers won, despite the fact that they have so many injuries and they had a couple guys foul out, that they played 5 guys, but one of them was fouled out. And the rule is, if the guy that fouls out gets a foul, it just automatically becomes a T, because you can't play without 5 guys, and he already had 6 fouls. Have you ever in any scenario seen that happen?
No. I mean, you know, if Gene Hackman was coaching that on Hoosiers, you'd say, my team's on the floor. Clearly, wait a minute, we'll get the guy that fouled out in here. No, I've never heard of it. Because, I mean, you just don't hear the injuries like that. And to being that bad that you have to use a guy that got fouled out. I mean, you know, the only thing that I think you could compare about would be like if, let's say you're in baseball and you take your backup catcher to pinch hit and you can't put him back in. Well, let's say your starting catcher got hurt and you don't have anything else. I've heard of that, the catcher being able to come back in. I don't know the repercussions, but that's... Considering it's Cleveland and the Lakers, I don't know. It doesn't matter because they're both bad. But it's a first from what you're telling me.
And then on the flip side, because as you just alluded to, the reason I brought that up is because we want to talk about Cleveland a little bit. Because the sad thing is, I didn't get to watch that game. I read the recap, and apparently, even though it was the center, his name's Andre Sacre, something like that, is the center that was fouled out. It's like Sacre. Even though, and they said that anytime the ball came near him, he was Matador defense because he didn't want the T, because obviously those are huge ramifications, that Cleveland decided, I think the next four possessions after, because about 4 minutes left is when he got his sixth foul, they just came down and jump shot, jump shot, jump shot, jump shot, and Cleveland lost that game. The Lakers had four eligible players, five people on the floor, an automatic tee if you could go at the center and get him to commit a foul, which, let's be honest, it's the NBA. I don't think it's that difficult to draw a foul.
No.
And Cleveland blew it.
Well, I think Cleveland, in the tradition of the Cleveland Browns, I mean, that team is this is one of my new favorite sayings, is a dumpster fire. You trade Bynum, who you could have cut and saved 6 million clams, and you pick up Luol Deng because you want to make a run to the playoffs, and instead you've gotten worse. And now you fire the GM who made the trade, which means, you know, it's not like somebody woke up all of a sudden one day and said, "Boy, we suck. Who's to blame? Get rid of the GM." You had to have been thinking about this. So if that's the case, why did you let him do this? You had Bynum, you could have cut, say, 6 million, but you decide, no, we're not only not going to save money, we're going to spend money, we're going to pick up Luol Deng, and we're going to make the playoffs, even though it's better for us to get our balls in the lottery because then we can get a better player. That's a plan. Let's go. And they ended up firing the guy, Chris Grant, and promoted his assistant. That'll work. The guy under him. Boy, Cleveland, you know, Cleveland just sucks. You know, I mean,
the Indians made the playoffs last season.
Congratulations. What did that get you? Cup of soup? I mean, it's just pathetic. You're right. I mean, obvious advantage to get go down low, and yet all you want to do is pull up and shoot bad jump shots. That's from the Matt Painter Purdue offensive school of let's just get the hell out of here because I got a lunch date to come up.
I don't know. You're right. That's why I kicked it to you, because I knew that's what you're going to say, and I don't have anything to dispute it. But, I mean, how do you describe that? Because I'm assuming even you, I don't know where you put them in your preseason rankings when we did the basketball thing with Mike, but I'm assuming you had them close to the playoffs, because they, to me, seem like the Houston Texans from a couple years ago, where everybody's picking them to finally break through and make the playoffs. And granted, the Texans did and then quickly tanked after two seasons, but Cleveland looks like a mess because, as you know, we're Bulls fans, so we still keep tabs kind of on Deng, and he's come out and said he hates the locker room, that it's just a bad place to be.
I don't know. I mean, clearly this team last year was thought towards the end to be an up-and-comer and maybe someone to get LeBron. Well, lots of luck with that idea.
No,
that's
kidding.
Not happening. And the guy they took number one, Anthony Bennett, can't get off the bench. Whoops! We screwed that pickup. So in the matter of, like, I don't know, half a NBA, well, maybe three quarters of one, if you count towards the end of last year and you're about halfway this year, that optimism is just kind of gone. And then it's just, you know, it's a train wreck. And Kyrie Irving, who looks like a good player, can't stay healthy. That's a problem too.
Yeah.
You know, you don't pay him to model suits on the bench. He needs to be out there modeling the Cleveland uniform.
That's going to do it this week. We're going to try and get Mike in next week for an NBA update. Follow 3sportsguns.com for the articles. The About section has the QR scanner for the Android app. All the podcasts available on iTunes. The Twitter handle, Take the Pitch. On Facebook, The Triple Option. Stay up to date on both of those. And for this week, I'm Blair Gunther.
Yeah.
And watch out for the pitch.